welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Welcome to an hour of science fiction. Later on, a story from H.G. Wells on escape. But right now, it's X-1 with a tale courtesy. This story by Clifford Cimac was first heard on the Dimension X NBC sci-fi series in 1951 with a script repurposed for this next broadcast, heard on NBC on August 18, 1955.
Countdown for blastoff. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds.
X minus one.
Tonight's story, courtesy. This is the story of the second expedition to the planet of Landro. I'm recording it for any future expeditions which might land on this godforsaken sphere, in the hope that they may learn from our tragic example. As I write, there are two of us left. Two, out of an original complement of 180 men. One of us, myself, will be dead in less than 23 minutes. As for the other, heaven have mercy on him. I do not know. On June 3rd, 1997, less than 2 months ago, the last of our supply ships blasted off from Lando for their return to Earth. After it had gone, I remember looking out across the plain at the dead city, one of thousands that dotted this planet. It had tall, graceful buildings, atomic power systems, vacuum conveyors, all perfect, all deserted, all ominous. How had it happened? The best guess was that the plague had frightened the original inhabitants of the planet so that they'd piled into rocket ships and headed for some distant planet. I often wondered why a civilization so advanced as Landro could not find a serum to beat the plague. It had taken our Earth doctors less than 6 months to develop an immunization method. Well, maybe those aborigines back in the hills knew the answer. That strange, ugly little people who had taken to the caves the day we landed. I was thinking these things when something happened that gave me the shock of my life.
Good evening, Captain.
Oh, what brings you here, Doctor?
It's the matter of the serum, sir.
Oh, what about the serum?
It's no good.
No good?
It's too old. 10 years too old.
But didn't you examine it?
Yes, I did, but... Well, my eyesight has been failing lately.
Are you aware, Doctor, that the last supply ship has returned to Earth? Do you know we'll have no more contact for 2 years?
I...
Just how long do you give us?
Well, the present immunity will last a week or so. Then, without booster shots, it's just a question of time until someone picks up the plague. After that...
What about the natives? They don't die from the plague.
The accepted theory is that they've developed an immunity.
Well, suppose they haven't developed an immunity, Doctor. Suppose they get the disease.
Then they must have a treatment for it. If they don't, there would be no natives.
Would you be willing to go on an expedition to the hills to find out?
At this point, Captain, I'd be willing to do anything. Absolutely anything. I am truly sorry.
You're sorry? Dr. Morgan, sometime when you aren't too busy, when you have a moment, I'd hate to inconvenience you. Would you mind telling me how it feels to murder 180 men?
181, including yourself. I did a lot of thinking after Dr. Morgan left my hut. It was still unreal for me. After all, the planning of an expedition was no simple thing. You put into it the result of years of training and experience, years of study at the academy, years of learning how to handle men and natives. Every man on my crew was hand-picked for his skill. And yet, a simple thing like a myopic surgeon misreading a label could blast the whole thing. Yes, it was a shame. And I did the only thing I could think of. I yelled for Bat Ears Brady. Brady! Get your carcass in here. Take the lead out.
Okay. Well, what's up?
Sit down, Bat Ears.
You got trouble, Kev?
We got trouble.
What?
The serum's no good.
What?
Morgan forgot to check it. It's 10 years too old.
Holy jumping snails. You're going to court-martial
that? That wouldn't do much good. We'll all be dead pretty soon unless somebody figures something out.
Well, what are you going to do, Kev?
Well, there's only one chance. One chance in 10 million.
What?
The natives.
Them cave rats. What good can they do us?
Now, they don't get the plague, so maybe they know a cure.
Okay. Let's get a few of them and beat it out of them.
That's why you're here.
Shoot.
How'd you like to come along on a little expedition up to the cave country? You, me, the doctor, and Faulkner.
Faulkner? Now listen, Cap, he's worse than the doctor.
Yes, but he knows more about the native culture than anybody here. He's the only one who's completely familiar with the records of the first expedition.
Okay, so it's me, you, the doc, and Faulkner. When do we start?
Tonight, in half an hour. We should reach the cave country by tomorrow. With luck, we'll be able to find natives before night. Benny Faulkner was the expedition anthropologist. One of the most unfortunate-looking individuals I've ever met. An ugly man with large ears and a big nose. His body was small and consumptive, but he had a good brain. And he was the best anthropologist the Interplanet Institute could recommend. He and Dr. Morgan were the only two civilians on the expedition. We set out. And after several hours hard walking.
Cap.
And what is it?
Don't look now, but very slowly turn your eyes to the right and look behind that big yellow rock.
Okay.
You see anything?
No?
Then keep looking. Don't stop walking or let on.
Okay.
There.
Yes, it looked like a shadow or something.
It's one of them gimpos. He's been following us now for almost an hour, dodging in and out behind the rocks. Shall I bring him in?
No, not yet. Just pretend you don't see him. Tell the others, if they notice, to show no fear. Because nothing will start these simple-minded cavemen like fear. The manual said, under no circumstances shall a member of the patrol display fear before a native. The dignity of the Earthman must be preserved at all costs. Just before dawn, we reached the cave country. We were tired and hungry, and we stopped to cook some food and rest. Everything was quiet. There was no sign of the gimpo which had been trailing us until...
Okay, get in there, you sneaking little monkey man. Come on, before I break this shovel on your star.
Here, what's the trouble?
Cap, I caught me one of these gimpos sneaking around outside the tent.
Bring him in the light of the fire. We can get a look at him. Faulkner.
Yes, sir?
Keep an eye on him. Try to establish some communication.
All right, get in
there. Look out. No need to knock him down, Batty.
Oh, that's the only language they understand.
Let's see if you can reach him, Faulkner.
Okay, Captain. I'll need a drum of some sort.
A what?
Well, they have no language as we know it, and they have a very rudimentary sense of hearing. I find they communicate with one another through a very primitive kind of vibration of the tongue. The closest I can come is a series of drum beats, a sort of Morse code. The psychologist on the first expedition had it worked out before he was killed by the plague. I've studied his notes, and I think it'll work.
You mean these little critters can talk to one another?
Yes, I believe they can. At any rate, we'll have a chance to find out. Do we have something I can use for a drum?
Here. Take my water bottle.
Thank you, Doctor. Now, I'll tap it 3 times. That's a greeting of some sort.
Just a moment.
Yes, sir?
I don't want you treating this fellow like an equal. Don't give him the idea that we're desperate. Once they sense that, you're lost.
I have to communicate with him, sir.
Well, just bear in mind what I said. Dignity.
Yes, sir. I'll do my best, sir.
It was a strange sight. On one side of the water bottle crouched little Benny Faulkner, looking for all the world like a human spider. Across from him crouched the Landrian, a humpbacked, gray little creature with an enormous head and those huge, soft, lavender eyes. Every few moments, one would stop the strange tattoo of communication and the other would take it up. I'm setting forth in this narrative the most vital part of their conversation, as Benny Faulkner later transcribed it from the best of his memory. Benny asked, "Why were your cities abandoned? Was it the plague?" The native said yes. Benny said, "Do you still fear the plague?" The native answered yes. "Do any of your people become afflicted?" The answer was some. "How do you treat them?" Silence. "How can we find a cure for the plague?" More silence. Then the native said, "Go among my people." Benny asked, "Will we find the answer among your people?" The native replied, "My people have the answer." Benny said, "Will you tell me the answer?" The native repeated, "Go among my people." As far as the Landrian was concerned, the conversation was ended. He rose to go and Faulkner stepped from his path, but Brady was there to ensure the bet.
Hold on there, bucko. You ain't going no place.
Don't maltreat him, Brady. What did he say, Benny?
He says his people have the answer.
What do you think?
There may be some truth in it. He says some of his people still get the plague.
That must mean it isn't a question of immunity. They must have a cure.
Well, he wasn't clear on that.
Then they must have a vaccine to keep it from spreading.
Does he know?
His answer is for us to go among his people.
Well, that leaves it up to us. The first level of caves is on top of that cliff about a mile ahead.
It's a trap. I'll bet my last dollar on it.
Well, maybe not. And we'll have to risk it.
Wait.
Well?
Let me go. I got you all into this.
But how will you talk?
Benny here can give me enough of the code so I can ask the big question.
You understand that they might just decide to cut your throat?
I'm fully aware of the risk.
All right, Doctor. You go ahead. We'll wait at the foot of the cliff. If you aren't back down in 3 hours, we'll come up after you.
What about the Gimpo here?
We'll hold him as a hostage to ensure the doctor's safety. If the doc comes back, all right, we'll let him go. If not, well, that's your job, Brady.
A pleasure.
It took Dr. Morgan about an hour to pick his way up the side of the cliff to the first of the openings where the Landrians lived. He waved to us before he entered the mouth of the cave, and we waved back. Then we settled down to wait. It was a long, long wait.
Eight o'clock. He's been up there more than 3 hours, Cap.
We'll give him a little more time.
It's getting colder.
Yes, keep that fire going.
How much longer are you going to wait, Cap?
We've got lots of time.
You'd think we'd have heard of something by now if they were going to knock him off, I mean.
No, not necessarily. Wait. Look, up on the cliff.
That's him, all right. Hey, what's he running for?
I don't know. He looks scared.
That crazy fool, if he don't look out...
Doctor! You'll... Dr. Morgan, look out! Look out!
We found the doctor at the foot of the cliff, crumpled and broken. There were no marks on his body, nothing except a twisted, mocking grin on his face. Oh, yes, and one other thing. Scrawled across the pad he had taken with him on which to make notes concerning the answer was a single word. The word was courtesy. We threw the paper away. The expedition was a failure. Though Bat Ears claimed he'd get it out of the Gimpo if I'd let him. I nodded in agreement. Bat Ears took the little native off behind an outcropping of rock. He was back in 15 minutes, dripping with sweat.
Well? Let's go, Cap.
Nothing.
But nothing.
Is he...
They ain't made very good, these little gray people. They come apart too easy, so... Let's go, huh, Cap?
All right. Benny... Benny, what is it?
I feel kind of sick. All of a sudden... In the back of my head, a dull kind of pain.
Let me see your tongue. Come on, give him a hand, Bat Ears. We've got to get him back to camp.
What is it?
I'm not sure, but that blackness on the tongue and the headache, it could be the plague. By the time we got Benny Faulkner back to camp, he had the red spots on his body, and then the fever began to rage. It was the plague, no mistake about it. Before morning, Collins, the supply sergeant, had it. Then it was Peabody. After that, the men went down like tenpins. Then one morning, Bat Ears Brady dragged himself into my tent and sat down. The lines in his face told me the end was coming pretty fast. Sit down, Brady. Well, what's the count?
Six left. We bury the chaplain today. Got anything to drink?
Sorry, I'm all out.
How about a cigarette, then? You got a cigarette?
Yeah, sure. Here. How's Faulkner?
I don't get it. He's still alive.
Still alive?
Yep. In fact, he's getting better. He's sitting up.
Holy mackerel.
Oh, this is a good cigarette.
It's like any other.
No. This one's different, Cap. This is my last.
What do you mean, Brady?
Take a look at my tongue. See? Little black spots.
Somehow I managed to get him into bed. He was already raving when I gave him the last of the morphine. It was incredible. Big, brawling, Bat-Ears Brady, a tower of strength, lying sick and whimpering on a cot. When he died, I went out on the moors to think. The sun was a dull red glow. Cold breeze whipped on me. But somehow I couldn't forget Faulkner. Why should Faulkner recover from a plague from which no man has ever recovered? Surely there must be a reason. Nothing happened without a reason. I turned and went back to see Benny Faulkner.
Hello, Captain.
Hello, Benny. How are you?
Pretty good. I got up and walked a couple of steps today. How goes it?
Brady's gone.
Oh.
I just buried him. Listen, Benny... There must be some reason why...
Well, there's nothing strange about me, nothing different from any other man.
There must be. You survived the virus. Benny, I want you to tell me everything you know about yourself, everything you can remember. Because somewhere in your makeup is some little thing that makes the difference. If I can find that thing, then maybe I can do something to save myself and the rest. Even if I can't, at least I can leave a record for any future expedition that comes to Landro. Okay?
Okay, Captain. Where should I start?
At the beginning. I'm going to take notes.
Well, I was born on the 2nd of July in 1971. My parents were ordinary people. My father was...
Captain, I've told you everything I can remember. 3 days now you've gone over me, pawed me, questioned me. What else can I tell you?
Benny, let's go over that last part once again.
Where should I start?
Take it from where the native started to walk away. You stepped out of his path and Brady grabbed him.
Okay, so I stepped out of his path.
Why?
What do you mean, why?
Why did you step out of his path?
Why not? Courtesy, I guess. What's the matter?
Courtesy. That's the word that Dr. Morgan had scrawled in his notebook.
Well, I don't see that.
I don't either. Tell me, Benny, why should you want to be courteous to a native?
Why not?
What about maintaining your own dignity?
Are you talking about dignity or arrogance?
I don't know. Benny, listen, maybe we were all wet in our deductions. Maybe these cities here on Landro weren't deserted centuries ago. Maybe these little people up in the caves are the same people who used to live in those big cities.
Why would they leave?
Maybe they found out the big cities weren't the answer. Maybe they found out that civilization doesn't necessarily bring happiness. So they just packed up and left. Returned to the simple.
Oh, it doesn't make sense. You're forgetting the plague.
What is the plague, Benny?
Well, I don't know.
Is it a virus?
I don't think they ever found out.
You know what I think?
What?
I think the plague is nothing more than what we know as greed and arrogance.
Captain, you're going off your rocker.
I think maybe we're in line to die, even if the serum was good. In fact, I don't think the serum had anything to do with it.
Oh, I never heard anything as crazy, fantastic in my life.
No? Well, I think I'll go back to my tent and finish writing the report. I am beginning to sweat a little.
Captain, maybe it isn't the plague.
It is. I've seen it too many times to kid myself about it.
Maybe hot compresses or something.
No, Ben.
Listen, Captain, you don't believe that junk about courtesy, do you? I mean, that's a lot of nonsense. You must know that. Holy mackerel, Captain. You do believe it, don't you?
Good night, Benny. I think I'd like to be alone for a while.
Okay. Good night, Captain.
Maybe the supply ship will be early. You can probably stick it out.
Sure. Good night, Captain.
This concludes my report. I'm turning it over to Benny Faulkner in the hopes that he will be able to transmit it to any other expedition commander who contemplates exploring the planet of Landro. The fever is beginning to mount now. My hands tremble as I write. The end should not be far off. There's little question in my mind as to what it will be. You see, I didn't have a chance. I stepped out of no paths. I showed no courtesy.
Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Courtesy, adapted for radio by George Lefferts from the story by Clifford Simad. Featured in the cast were Brett Morrison as Captain Ira Warren, Arnold Robertson as Bat Ears Brady, Edwin Jerome as Dr. Morgan, and Bill Griffiths as Benny Faulkner. Your announcer, Fred Collins.
X-1 on Tuned to Yesterday from August 18th, 1955 on NBC. You're listening to an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now, a story from H.G. Wells, adapted on the Escape series. Famous for many stories like The War of the Worlds and The Time Machine, the Escape series actually embraced several of his tales before this next broadcast, like The Country of the Blind, The Time Machine, Jimmy Goggles the God, and Pollock and the Poor Man. This next story, called Dream of Armageddon, set in the year 2200, from September 5th, 1948, on CBS.
Fed up with the everyday grind, tired out from the summer heat, want to get away from it all.
We offer you Escape. Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
You are caught in a web of nightmare, struggling to free yourself from sleep, while constantly, threateningly, your destruction draws closer, and you know unless you awake, the ultimate conclusion is death.
From the beginning, the dream was quite vivid and real, much more real than the dull world of business that moves by day. And in a short time, I began to thrust the waking world aside and live my life wholly in the dream, night by night. I was not then aware, of course, of the hideous ending to come. A thing so horrible to face that even though I doze now in my chair, I dare not sleep. I can't recall exactly when the dream, if it is a dream, first began. Oh, a month ago, perhaps. At any rate, I fell asleep in my flat and awoke in another place and another time. That is to say, as I fell asleep here, I awoke there, far away on an island in the Mediterranean and hundreds of years in the future.
Eden, you must wake up now.
Wake up? But I... Where am I?
Here with me, of course. Oh, Eden, my dear, you've been dreaming.
Oh, yes. Yes, I remember now. It was such a vivid dream. I thought I was a man living hundreds of years ago. Silly, but it took me a moment to shake it off.
And was I there with you? In the dream, I mean?
You're here with me now. That's the important thing. Has there been no word? Nothing has changed?
Nothing. Otherwise, I should have awakened you.
Good. Perhaps they've finally decided to leave us alone.
I hope so. I couldn't stand much more of it. Our faces on every telescreen all over the world. Scandal criers saying...
It does not matter, Noma. It's over. We've left all that behind us in the north. We're going to be very happy here.
Oh, my darling, we have to be. It's the only thing that will justify what you did.
Noma, can you doubt that we will? Come here. Look out through the glass wall there. Blue sea down below us, pale hills in the far-off mainland. Why, is there any more perfect place to be happy than here in Capri?
And what of the woman you brought with you? Did you not perhaps give up too much for her? Pay too great a price?
You're worth more than all of it, Noma.
You make me feel very humble. You were the most powerful man on earth, council master of the allied nations of the North, the ruler of a billion people.
A billion fools? Why, had they not been, they would have accepted you.
They felt they had reasons.
Reasons? Could not permit me to marry beneath my station now. I've given my whole life to them until now. Has a man no right to happiness, Noma? They follow their own desires. Why shouldn't I do the same for once?
Why not, indeed? I've no answer for you, beloved. I'm proud and humble for what you did. But also a little afraid.
Afraid of what?
I don't know, Heedon, I don't know. But I... The vice is here.
Pardon, Master Heedon. May I have your attention, please?
Yes. Yes, go ahead. What is it?
There is one here who desires to speak with
you. I'll see no one. I've told you that.
He tells me to say, the white grasses grow tall in the north and reach above the snow.
Heedon, it's the messenger from the council.
Yes. Very well, send him up.
What does it mean? Have they thought of some new
no,
way?
No. My darling, it is nothing. You'll talk of duty again and all the other things, the same kind of talk. It can't be anything else.
If only they'd chosen someone besides Eversham to govern.
But they did choose him. If he doesn't suit them, they can find someone else. I'll have no part of it.
He's such a fool, such a stupid, blundering fool.
Perhaps they need a fool. Perhaps that's why... Oh, there's the messenger. Come in.
I must beg you to pardon this intrusion, Master Heaton, but the council considers the matter of the greatest importance.
It's all right. Now, what is it you wish?
If we could speak alone, perhaps.
I have no secrets from the lady. She knows everything. Now, what is it?
I am empowered by the council to ask you to return at once and take charge of the government again.
Alone?
Yes, that would be required, of course.
Then the council wastes my time and theirs.
But there have been new developments. Evesham already has begun the moves we've always feared he would. No one but you can stop this madness, this foolish ambition of his.
Then more is the pity, for I do not choose to do anything about it.
You know what it means, of course.
I know nothing of the affairs of government. I am a private citizen engaged in seeking happiness.
Master Heaton, do you believe that one man can work out his fate apart and separate from the fate of all mankind?
You may leave now. You may go back and tell the council that I have no concern in their problems now or ever.
Very well, Master Heaton. But if you should decide differently, decide quickly, for there is very little time.
Oh, Heaton, is it true? Will it really come to that?
Probably. The South and the East are not easily bluffed.
But war. Loose in the world again for the first time in 100 years. War again.
They don't know what it is.
No, they don't. They've never seen it. Heaton, you can't let it happen.
No, my darling, I've made a choice, and it's final. If it comes to war and the whole world falls in ruins, then I'll live on in the ruins. But I'll live there with you. That's final.
Heaton, I'm afraid.
I calmed her fears at last with many brave prophecies of the joys we should find in our life together. And as we talked and watched the sun sink finally in the waters of the quiet sea, the blusterings of Evesham seemed far away, and the threat of war no more than a part of some nightmare. At a late hour, we fell asleep.
Henry.
Hmm?
Henry, wake up.
What?
I said wake up. Can't see why you always have to wait for me to shut off that clock.
Sorry, dear. Dreaming.
Dreaming, indeed. Now get yourself dressed. You want to be late again this week?
Good chance of war. I don't know just what I can do about it.
Oh, Henry, for pity's sake.
One thing's certain. I won't give her up, no matter what happens.
Her? Who's her?
Oh, yes, of course. I'm getting up right this minute. I'll get dressed right away.
Henry,
now, there's no need to get excited, dear. There's plenty of time at 7:12.
I never saw such a man in my life. Wasn't for me telling you what to do, I don't know what would become of you.
All that day at my office, I kept thinking about the dream. It was hard to remember that it had been a dream. It had been so real as everyday things going on around me. Perhaps even more real. Certainly more desirable. For, as you may have guessed, my daily life held little of interest. But in the dream, everything was different. There I could be the great Master Heaton, controlling the destinies of millions of people, feeling for the first time in my life a deep and exhilarating sense of power, so sharp in its contrast with the drab waking life I lead. And most of all, I could not forget the girl. The way she looked. The glorious way that she... Well, no matter. All day I kept wondering if I should be able to find the place again, so far away in space and time. Too long delayed, the night came at last, and I went to bed hopefully. But nothing happened. There was no dream. For 3 nights there was no dream, and I grew frantic with worry, with longing for her. And then came the 4th night.
Careful, darling. Watch where you're going. You almost fell over those rocks.
I'm sorry. I guess I was thinking of something else.
Yes, for 3 days now. You haven't been yourself at all.
Well, there are so many things to think about.
It's all right, Heaton. I've known you were thinking of it constantly, even though you've not mentioned it.
There's nothing new, is there?
What?
I mean... Well, have you had any word that you've kept from me? Thought it best to? Something of that sort?
No, Eden, no. I've had no word from the North. No one here has. Yet everyone seems to sense it. There's a fever in the air. Tenseness. So they could smell something. The smell of war, perhaps.
There'll be no war. Once Servisham knows his bluff's been called, he'll back down.
You know him better than that. You're proud of that blind luck of his to see him through. And you could stop him, Heaton. You could still go.
There'll be no going back.
How can we hope to find happiness for ourselves if millions die because of us?
If it should start, it can't last long. People in the world today have no idea what war is. When they find out, they'll have no part of it.
When they find out, it'll be too late. There'll be blood on the ground then, and hate and vengeance. And there can be no stopping it.
Then why should not... Well, then the fool shouldn't... They shouldn't start it then.
But they are fooled. You said yourself...
What?
Look.
Oh, planes. Some special pleasure flight from the North, I suppose.
Eden, they don't look like transport. They're not built the same. They're,
no.
They're like pictures
no,
of the
right.
old...
Those are war planes. Those are bombers.
It's begun already.
No. No, but it's part of the bluff and the dangerous part. Those planes have been stored away for 100 years. I knew of them, of course. All the council did, but... But I never thought I'd see them in the air.
I fear it's a wrong, terrible thing we've done. And I'm afraid that it would be a lie, my beloved, if I said I was sorry.
No more warplanes came to Capri in the next 2 days. But the sight and the sound of the first ones have been enough. The peaceful island of pleasure became a beehive of belligerent activity. Preparation for war by a people who had never known anything but peace. Old weapons, relics for years, came out of storage places, were cleaned, polished, made ready. Big guns appeared as if by magic, were quickly set in placements about the rocky isle. Norma and I took no part in the madness about us, but walked alone from the others. She with a growing sadness, and I with a swelling hatred for blind, blundering Evesham, and for the stupidity he'd called forth now in mankind. And then, late afternoon of the third day.
But why? Why do they act as if they might come here, Heaton? If there were a war, it could never reach to Capri.
Who knows why they act or what they think? There's no reasoning in them. They're like sheep, anxious to get their throats cut and have it over with.
It was all so beautiful, so beautiful.
Oh, Norma, Norma, it still is. All this has nothing to do with us. We've turned our backs on it. What they do now is their own concern. This can't touch us.
It's so terrible to think about it. Heaton, look. Planes have come back.
Yes.
Coming over the hills there.
He's still playing the same old game. Oh, how long can that blundering Evesham hope to... Norma. Norma, these are not the same ones.
What do you mean?
I know the shape of these. Warplanes. Warplanes from the south.
Then... Oh, no. Oh, no. It can't mean anything. Was that what they call a bomb?
That was what they call war.
War. Eden, I want to see it. All its horror and idiocy.
No.
I want to see it.
Not too close to the window, Norma.
Look, down there by the edge of the water, where the little pavilion was, Eden. Nothing but broken rocks and smoke drifting up.
Yes, yes, that's where the first bomb.
But why should they wish to destroy a little summer pavilion?
An accident. They were trying there for the docks.
We swam there every morning. Do you remember how clear and how clean the water was? There must be blood in it now.
Norma, Norma, there's no good in that kind of thinking. This is what they chose. Now they've got it.
They couldn't have known it would be like this.
Perhaps not. That can't be helped now. It's too late now for them ever to turn back.
How could they ever? Eden. Eden, look.
No, no, no.
Look. Eden, that plane. Along the beach. The whole promenade. Hundreds of people. Children, too. I don't want to see anymore. Not ever.
Got to find some way to get out of here. Some way. Capri is right in the middle of it.
It was so beautiful here. Why should anyone make war on Capri?
Why? War has a bad habit of spreading everywhere once it's turned loose. Just a moment.
Supervisor from 22.
I'd like a private plane and a pilot right away. Destination to be decided.
Sorry, sir. All planes have been taken over by the government. General order by Master Evesham.
Confound it. All right. What about a boat?
Power boats have been taken over. Perhaps a few small sailing craft may be still available.
navigator and enough crewmen.
Sorry, sir. The government has ordered all able-bodied...
All right. Just get me a boat, then. Buy it, charter it, whatever's necessary. I'll sail it myself.
Yes, sir.
Where can we go, Heaton?
I don't know anywhere but here.
Yes, let's go quickly. Take me away someplace even far away. Anywhere but here.
Then flight. Days of flight from stolid death in his military boots who tramped always just behind us, never far away. I fought to stay asleep, to stay with my dream, stay with Noma. I cursed each time I awoke.
I simply can't understand you, Henry. You moon around the house like a lovesick calf. Haven't been to the office in 3 days. Don't you have any consideration for your job or for me? Do you want to see us kicked out into the street like tramps without a cent to our name?
My waking life became the vague movement of shadow figures of which I remember nothing now. But my life in the dream was very real. Oh, yes, very real.
No. I've just come from there. You cannot go through the pass.
Why can't we?
It is impossible. You must go back to the coast quickly.
Can't you explain to him we must find some place to buy food? We've had nothing to eat for 2 days.
No, lady. There is no food here. Everyone is starving. Pestilence has broken out.
Pestilence?
Horrible plague. Came suddenly. Already, people of 2 villages are lying dead in the gutters. It's spreading very quickly.
Come, Noma. Let's go back to the boat. Tried first to land somewhere along the southern shore of the Mediterranean. We found it everywhere the same. In some places, the people were dying of disease and starvation. In others, they were dying of bleeding burns from the flame of war. Always, they were dying.
Heaton, everywhere we go, we find dead bodies. More and more all the time. What's happening? Has the whole world gone mad? Is the whole world dying?
Back again to the north and a landing on the peninsula. Then pushing our way overland, trying to find some haven in a world intent on smashing itself to bloody fragments. Fleeing from the idiot fury around us and being blocked at every turn.
You cannot go there. You must turn back immediately.
Why? Why must we turn back when there's no place left to go back to? Back where?
That I cannot tell you. But if you go farther, you will die. They have used poison gas. The area is contaminated over hundreds of miles. I've seen people die from it. It is not a pretty sight.
Yes, everywhere.
Of course, if you would like to stay here, I'm sure we can take care of that pretty little throat of yours. Yes, indeed.
There were no real battle lines as yet. No armies. The thing had come too fast. But everywhere roving bands fought, plundered, killed one another. Sometimes not even knowing if they were killing friend or foe. And always overhead were the planes, humming like hawks, killing anything that moved.
Eden, do you think he sees it?
I'm not sure, Noma. Don't move. Don't move. He's heading toward us, all right.
Eden, we can't just lie.
Don't
here.
Move, Noma. By heaven, I think it is us.
Look.
Where?
That old woman walking on the road. Doesn't she know? Oh, Heaton, horrible.
No, my no. Let's go. It wasn't us he was after. And so for love and for reason... On and on, day after day, we fled from the monster stupidity of war. Till at last we could flee no farther. We found ourselves at dawn one morning in an open space near those great ruined temples at Paestum. Roman ruins that have stood for centuries were still standing even then. We sat and watched the sunrise, the most beautiful I've ever seen. We said little to one another. Low hills broke away below us, dotted here and there by trees, low thickets of laurel between. The great stones of the temples above us were pale pink in the morning sun. And the silence was everywhere.
silence and a false feeling of peace.
Morning. Looking out there. One would never know.
Oh, it's beautiful. But we can't stop here no more. We're only hours away from it now.
How much farther, Heaton? How far might we run an hour?
I don't know, my dear. It seems to be everywhere.
Sometimes these last few nights, I've looked up at the stars and I thought, all of this is happening because of us. We're to blame for it, you
know. No, darling. No, we tried to find happiness, that's all. Can there be anything evil in that?
I don't know, Heaton, but I'm afraid. Had you not run away with me, this would not have happened. Millions of people must die for our happiness. Something is wrong.
Well, the blame lies with them. They die for their own stupidity.
We are not stupid. We could have prevented it. Had you gone back and left
no,
me...
No, my darling. Now, there'll be no talk of that kind. We'll still find... We will. The chance to work things out somewhere.
I have a strange feeling, Eden. We shan't have any more chances. We'll... Some kind of debt. They're going to have to pay for it very soon.
Oh, you're tired, Norma. That's why you talk this way. You'll soon
look,
feel...
Look, another flight of planes.
Yes. Yes, they're everywhere now.
Like vultures hovering, watching and waiting everywhere.
Norma. Norma, we'll find someplace yet. Someplace. Norma! Norma, get down! Norma. No. Norma. Norma, you all right?
Eden, I love...
Norma.
Norma!
I sat there on the ground for hours, holding her body close. I was only dimly aware that she was... that she no longer lived. Time had no meaning. The world receded far away. The shadows of afternoon pointed all one way, and my thoughts were only dreams within a dream. I must have stared at them for several minutes, not realizing who they were, watching them approach through the bushes. For they came within yards before it struck me suddenly. Those uniforms. They were soldiers of the South and the East. With only one thought in mind, I jumped to my feet and ran toward them. No, it's all right. It's all right. You don't need those guns. I mean no harm.
Hello, Deva.
You see, I only wanted you not to come here. My wife, she's dead. There's no one else here.
Duck, nay back.
No, put away the bayonet. There's no need for it. You can take your men around the other... Now, what are you going to do?
Duck, the sheriff?
No! I lay there on the ground for a long time after they left. At first I tried to crawl back to her, but I couldn't. Then later I was unconscious. Whether this be Armageddon, that last flaming end of the world, I do not know. But of this I am sure, when the end does come, it shall come through man's unheeding selfishness, through man's stupidity. For when man stood up and learned to think and was no longer an animal, he became one with the gods. And like the gods, must take heed of the fate of mankind. This I know. Always before, I had longed desperately to escape into the dream. But now with equal desperation, I fear to do so. For Heden's world is dying now. Shuddering in the last great convulsions of its death agony. Over the whole great landscape of Earth lie the rotting, disfigured bodies of the dead. the sad sun gleams with the pale and ghastly light through the smothering curtain formed by the hideous fumes of war. The moans of the half-dead swell up from the plains of earth, fill the vast emptiness of the heavens, and go unanswered. Starvation, pestilence, war and death, the whole world is dying. Eden, too, is dead. He died hours before I awoke this morning. His body still lies before the silent temples at Paestum. Yet in the dream, I still occupied his body after he was dead. Great vultures came and tore with their beaks and claws, and I was still conscious. I was still conscious. Now tonight, because of that, though I grow faint with weariness, I dare not go to sleep. In the name of heaven, how long will a dream go on?
Escape is produced and directed by Norman McDonald.
Escape on Tuned to Yesterday from September 5th, 1948 on CBS. 2 weeks after that broadcast, Escape would close out their 1948 radio season with another story from H.G. Wells, The Man Who Could Work Miracles. And so closes this hour of sci-fi on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.